A household name in global business is under fire in South Africa. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Coca-Cola has announced that its South African divisions will halt work with McKinsey, the world's biggest consulting company. It's one of several businesses, including some banks, moving away from the firm. It's part of a big corruption scandal in South Africa and what South Africans call state capture that has touched much more than this global consulting and research firm. The BBC's Lerato Mbele is following the story from Johannesburg.
David, it's quite a tangled web that McKinsey allegedly has gotten itself caught up in. There is a concept in South Africa called state capture, and simply put, it's this idea that significant state-owned companies have issued fraudulent contracts to a very powerful business family that has links to the country's president and first family, and the corruption has cost South African taxpayers a lot of money. And McKinsey is being accused of being one of the companies that have been embroiled in this state capture saga. They are accused of having facilitated a service contract for Trillion, which then did work for the state utility company, the biggest electricity company in the country, known as Eskom, and by virtue of that relationship have allegedly siphoned off quite a lot of money in fees out of state coffers.
And McKinsey is defending itself?
McKinsey have refuted all of these claims. They have denied any wrongdoing and said at worst they were guilty of an error of judgment in terms of offering a service contract to Trillion. But in terms of fraud, theft, corruption, they denied point blank.
Back to state capture, there's this broader government inquiry ramping up?
Exactly. And whilst an inquiry has now been commissioned to look into this entire broad, murky world of state capture, McKinsey may ultimately be found to have not done something wrong, but definitely their reputation has taken a significant blow in all of this. But we'll only know the true facts once the state capture inquiry has completed its work. That commission was only set up in the last fortnight or so, so it's still a way to go to get to the bottom of this.
The BBC's Lerato Mbele in Johannesburg. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's also news India has banned the accounting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers from auditing publicly traded companies in that country for 2 years. This comes after PwC failed to catch a big fraud at an information technology company. The founder of Satyam Computer Services later admitted to forging bank documents and padding sales by close to $1 billion. The Securities and Exchange Board of India says what it called fraud, deceit, and artificiality can slow that country's economic growth and deter foreign investment. Let's check the markets. The FTSE index in London is up 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up 0.1% as well. Interest rates, a tad down this morning, but in the grander scheme of things, getting a little more expensive here. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.54% this morning. It was down near 2% in September. Now to how old ideas about city neighborhoods persist in ways that can lock in poverty. In the 1930s and 40s, the government drew up maps with red lines around what were seen as bad parts of town, risky areas they were called. These red line maps were used by government agencies and private lenders to decide who got loans. Redlining was outlawed in the 1960s. But a teachable moment this morning about how these scars on our cities remain. Ariella Cohen is editor-in-chief of Next City, a daily online publication. She and her colleagues recently held up the old red line maps to today's map of Philadelphia and can still see the imprint. Thanks for joining us, Ariella.
Thanks for having me, David.
Isn't it striking when you look at the original designations in the 1930s and 40s? I mean, they decided certain neighborhoods were, quote, dangerous. That's what they called them.
Yeah, they did. And the criteria was pretty subjective. They had these appraisers who had come from the private real estate industry go in and just basically walk around neighborhoods and say, oh, you know, this looks kind of sketchy, essentially. They thought that density was bad. They thought proximity to any kind of manufacturing was negative. And again, if there was a presence of Blacks, people, immigrants, even Italians, Jews, other ethnic whites, certainly people of Hispanic or Asian backgrounds, that was a ding against you.
So this notion of redlining was official policy in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond, but it was then outlawed. Your team examined a city today, and you could still perceive the outlines of these old putative boundaries?
Absolutely. So we took the 1934 redlining map created by the Homeowners Loan Corporation and overlaid it with a contemporary map of Philadelphia and looked at the Census Bureau data from 2015 in those areas. And you could still see how areas that were redlined back in the 30s continue to be high poverty areas and continue to be neighborhoods that are segregated.
This challenges the narrative that, you know, the Fair Housing Act gets passed in 1968, and we wipe away the redlining and things improved. You're saying not necessarily.
You know, these neighborhoods were systematically starved of investment. So the federal government and the real estate industry had policies that made it harder for people to get access to credit, access to equity, build infrastructure, build houses there. And then as those areas became lower and lower valued because of the lack of investment in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, people left.
What's your sense, Ariel? I mean, you looked at Philadelphia, but you think the pattern would be repeated if you looked at other cities?
Absolutely. And other researchers have looked at cities like Chicago and found very similar patterns. I think that this was a national system. It was a federal policy and with national actors in the real estate industry. So I think cities were pretty universally challenged by it.
The piece in Next City is called How Redlining Segregated Philadelphia. Ariella Cohen, Editor-in-Chief, thank you.
Thank you.
And we're following South Korea's crackdown on Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency that's a great tool for legitimate and illegitimate business, is especially popular there. Now the South Korean government has drafted a bill to ban trading on cryptocurrency exchanges. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.